Read me romance. Read, read me romance. Read me romance. Read, read me romance.
You could take a look in a book, that's fine. Or you could sit back, relax, and unwind and
read me romance. Read, read me romance.
Today's episode of Read Me Romance is brought to you by Summer Boob Sweat. Summer Boob Sweat, thanks for being the reason we can't wear gray between June and September. You kind of suck. Happy Thursday! Hey, lady listeners, it's Tessa Bailey. Happy Thursday. We're here for the fourth installment of Evermore by B.B. Reed. It's, I feel like you can see what's coming. This is such an angsty situation, and I feel like I would normally be like, oh, no, I'm not touching that. I can't deal with the fact that he's dating somebody in public and her in private. Like, that's just so, I don't know, it's like soap opera-y and like, it makes me nervous, but she does it so well. And like, you feel so secure in Ever's love of four that like, you don't, like, I'm not worried at all. Like, I can enjoy the drama without being nervous about it. And that's really rare in a writer. I don't feel like she's trying to emotionally manipulate me. It's just so wonderful. And it's just like, just the teen drama written just with a perfect note. And I love it. So I won't keep you too long. But I have been seeing a lot of posts about swimsuit season lately. So this is your reminder that you already have your beach body and it's beautiful and fuck everybody. And you're allowed to go enjoy, like, you're allowed to go enjoy the beach or the swimming pool, even though you don't look like a supermodel. Is that crazy? Like, is that such a crazy concept that, like, you might just be able to go put on a fucking bathing suit and enjoy your life without worrying about what people think about your dimpled thighs or your back fat. Like, if it's me, those are the things that I hate about myself, and I try not to, and I'm trying to like grow out of that. And I feel like I'm making some progress. And I think it's because of this podcast, just talking to you guys about it and saying things out loud and hearing your feedback. It's like, yeah, I'm not alone in this like kind of just petrified feeling of having to put on a bathing suit and be in front of being in front of my mother. Like, we're going to California this summer, my family and I, and my parents are going to meet us for like a couple of days in San Diego. And like, I have so much great stuff planned for this trip. I'm so excited about it. It's kind of like a once in a lifetime trip. Taking my daughter to see my hometown and driving down the coast of California. And the one thing I'm fixated on is wearing a bathing suit in front of my mother. How ridiculous is that? Like, you guys have to tell me how ridiculous that is. You know, like, let's not say it's her fault for making me feel that way and just focus on how I can overcome my fear of, I guess, being imperfect. Is that what we're afraid of? I just think that like we are looking at Pinterest and looking at, you know, even just authors, their inspiration photos for their characters, just, you know, and I'm guilty of that. I'm not saying that I'm not, but everybody's so beautiful on the internet and that's not real. And anyways, this is just your reminder that you are separate from your appearance. You are a good person. You have a good heart, and it has nothing to do with your body weight. You know, like, they're two different things. And I feel like some people determine their self-worth by how they look, including myself sometimes. And like, we have to stop doing that. And if I could just make a suggestion, go follow author Julie Murphy on Instagram. She's a beautiful woman. She's a fantastic author, and she wears a bathing suit on Instagram. She's like, you guys can wear whatever you want to the pool and enjoy your fucking summer. And she's just so like, and I'm sure like, you know, she's like any other woman that has insecurities, but she's just really makes me feel happy. Following her on Instagram makes me feel happy. I think you should go do it too. And if you get a chance, read her book, Dumplin', because it's fantastic. A lot of you have probably seen the movie with Jennifer Aniston. If you haven't seen Dumplin', that's another movie that's great for just kind of like reminding you that, you know, your self-esteem doesn't have to be determined by what other people think of you. Anyways, that's my, I guess, golden nugget of wisdom for the day. Hopefully it wasn't just a bunch of rambling. You guys are beautiful, and go and enjoy your day how you want to enjoy it, regardless of how anybody views you or looks at you. You live your life and don't worry about anybody else. Okay? All right. Love you guys. I don't think I've said once that this is Read Me Romance. If you stumbled upon this podcast and you're confused about where you are, go back to Monday and start fresh with Evermore by Bebe Reid. First installment. This is the fourth installment, and tomorrow will be the final one. You get your happily ever after. So be there, and I'll be here with Leah and Mel tomorrow. So here is the fourth installment of Evermore. I'll catch up with you guys on the other side. Bye.
Chapter 4. 4. ETA to prom. 33 days. I didn't see or hear from Ever after I left his room yesterday, and I was beginning to wonder if he had actually been upset. I'd gone to his room that night, but he wasn't there, and I assumed he was still out with the Montgomerys. Soon after, I fell asleep and slept until morning. I checked my phone and didn't see any of his cheeky little texts he would send whenever we slept apart. Deciding to make him sweat if he was mad, I took the time to walk JD, shower, and dress in my school uniform. And then I went down to the kitchen with my backpack, keys, and helmet in tow, and found Jamie, as usual, already there stuffing his face. He looked up from his plate with surprised eyes. "Why are you looking at me like that?"
"Just impressed you're still here and not over at Aunt Evelyn's by now."
"Why would I be over there?" It wasn't like Ever's mom and I were the best of friends. Her first impression of me was spoiled by the fact that my mom was technically having an affair with her husband.
"Because that's where Ever is."
"Why would Ever go visit his mom right before school?" Jamie frowned and set down his fork, still full of steaming scrambled eggs. My heart dropped. If there was one thing Jamie liked more than sex, it was food.
"Because he's living there now."
He paused, waiting for my reaction, but I was still confused, and it obviously showed because Jamie then added,
"Unc kicked him out yesterday."
Jamie went back to shoving food in his mouth as if he'd just told me it was going to rain today. I lost the little appetite I had and fled the kitchen. I needed answers, and I wasn't waiting around to get them. Upstairs, I bypassed my room and headed straight for the master suite. On the rare occasions Thomas was still home at this time, he would be in his office. But since Rosalind refused to leave their bedroom, he had set up a temporary workstation in there. I reached their door and stood there staring at the wood. I could just ask Ever, but I knew if he hadn't told me himself by now, then he was in one hell of a pissy mood and wouldn't tell me what I wanted to know until he was good and ready. The second reason was that I was hoping to catch even a glimpse of her. I hadn't laid eyes on Rosalind in weeks. The last time I tried, she'd gone into a rage, so I had stayed away. Steeling myself for whatever may come, I knocked. Softly. I could already feel myself capitulating and was seconds from walking away, but then I knew it was too late when I heard someone moving around. The door cracked open, and the first thing I noticed was that it was utterly dark inside the room. I sighed, knowing what that meant. Rosalind was relapsing. Whenever she did, she became afraid of even the smallest bit of light. She believed it was a beacon for people who wanted to hurt her. Other days, she feared the dark. Around and around it went. And then there were days she wouldn't eat because she was sure the food was poisoned. The second thing I noticed was the bags under Thomas's eyes and the weariness within them.
"Good morning, Four."
"Morning." The words, "Why did you send Ever away?" were there, but I couldn't allow myself to utter them. Did I have the right to be angry with him when he had been so good to Rosalind and me?
I didn't mean to disturb you. I just wanted to know how she was doing. Clearing his throat, he looked behind him before stepping into the hall and shutting the door. It was a clear sign that I wouldn't be seeing her anytime soon.
I'm afraid I haven't been completely honest with you, he said after taking a deep breath.
Okay.
Your mother hasn't taken her medication in weeks and refuses to see her doctor.
He waited, bracing, it seemed, for my shock and anger, but none came. By now, I was numb to Rosalind's ups and downs, and I didn't know whether to be thankful for that or not. Let me see her. I can get her to take her pills. It won't cure her paranoia, but if she's lucid enough, she will agree to get some help. I know it. I wondered for a moment if that was hope I heard in my voice. No, it couldn't be. I knew better. Thomas rubbed his forehead, looking deep in thought.
I don't want to put this all on you, especially since I did this.
I shook my head. It wasn't your fault. This was going to happen eventually, whether your wife came back or not.
Perhaps you're right, but I feel responsible all the same.
I didn't bother easing his conscience further and said instead, Can I ask you something?
Sure.
How long have you known about her illness? He looked startled for a moment, but then he sighed.
A couple of months after you left, she was different. I thought she was just sad, like any mother would be with having you so far away. In a way, I still think that was true. Eventually, the situation I was in got weird enough that I started doing some digging that wasn't entirely legal.
That's why you brought me back. And all that time, Ever had been holding this over my head when his father had known all along.
I got her the help she needed, but your mom and I haven't been romantically involved since then.
Why let us stay here, then?
I guess I felt guilty for uprooting you and then sending you away. I wasn't going to do it again.
I nodded, and it was followed by an awkward silence. Neither of us knew what to say, so I decided it was better to just leave.
Four,
he called, and I turned to face him again.
Is there something else you wanted to ask me?
For a moment, I was confused, and then it dawned on me. Ever. Thomas was waiting for me to ask about his son. No, there's nothing else.
Right.
He cleared his throat.
Well, I just wanted to let you know that I sent Ever to stay with his mom for a while. Someone should keep her company after her ordeal.
How magnanimous of you. He looked like he'd just swallowed something stale. Oh, okay. Good idea. I turned again to go, and this time, thankfully, he let me. I didn't believe his reason for sending Ever away for a second, which meant there was only one person left who could offer the truth.
There you are!
I stopped short in the open door of the stall I'd tried to vacate. Amanda Clark, Brynwood Academy's gossip and head of the prom committee, with bright eyes and a triumphant smile, blocked the exit. Inwardly, I groaned. One conversation with her my first day here had led to me spreading a rumor claiming Ever's dick was shrimpish, which then led to my exile after Ever retaliated by setting his dumb jock friends on me. Suffice it to say that I've learned my lesson about talking to Amanda Clark. Did you seriously follow me in here? Since it was the middle of a period, the girls' bathroom, as well as the halls, had been empty when I rushed in to relieve my bladder, so I knew our meeting was no coincidence. I'd bet anything that one of her spies told her where I'd be since we no longer shared classes. Thank fuck. It made dodging her this past week easier. She glanced at her pink clipboard before regarding me disapprovingly. You still haven't RSVP'd, and as the obvious choice for prom queen, it's imperative that you do. Why is that obvious again? I shoved by her and stepped to the sink. Because of your thing forever, silly. The warm water washing over my hands wasn't enough to drown out her giggling or ease the sudden cold chilling my skin. To make matters worse, when I met her stare in the mirror, she winked. I know Barbie is Ever's girlfriend, Amanda continued, and therefore she should win, but Brynwood loves a good scandal, and it's been a while. And you're telling me this to sell me ongoing? Amanda offered a conspiratorial smile. Well, that plastic bitch thinks she's better than everyone. It would be nice to take her down a peg or two. She's the most popular girl in school, and she doesn't even have any friends. It's unnatural. Who says she doesn't have friends? I shut the water off just as she scoffed. You mean the Holy Trinity? The Holy Trinity? She rolled her eyes. Ever, Jameson, and Vaughn. She used to run around causing trouble with them when we were kids. Some say she was their leader. A wicked gleam suddenly entered her eyes. Maybe she's a lesbian and she's just dating Ever to cover it up. My stomach turned, knowing that by the end of the day, Barbie will have been forced inside the closet, at least until Ever worked his magic and put out the fire. I'd witnessed on more than one occasion, one of them being caused by me when I first arrived, how swiftly and brutally he snuffed rumors regarding him or someone he cared about. Snatching some paper towels from the dispenser, I dried my hands. Just because her friends happen to all be male doesn't make her a lesbian, and even if she were, join us in the 21st century, won't you? Rolling her eyes, she studied her nails. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with it, but it would make for some juicy gossip. She stepped closer, and I forced myself to stand my ground, even though my skin crawled being this close to ignorance. And then Ever would be single, she sing-songed. I'm not interested. Besides, he's already mine. Her eyes seemed to dance as her smile widened. What if I told you that he was interested? I wouldn't believe you. What if I had proof? She countered. Already on my way to the door, I stopped short and whirled around. Proof? I echoed shakily. That wasn't good, at least not for Barbie and our parents, who still didn't know about us. And with reason. To the world, my mom was a basket case. To me, she was just broken. I know who sent you a Valentine. Those are supposed to be anonymous. Not when you're Ever McNamara. I was there when he bought one and may have peeked. This was bad. Really bad. If Amanda had proof. As casually as I could, I dug my phone from my pocket. While Amanda chattered on, I typed out a quick SOS. The school year was pretty much over, at least for seniors, so hardly anyone went to class. Jamie liked to hang around when the mood struck him and had turned the campus into his personal playground. And if anyone knew how to distract or repel a girl, it was him. He must have been close by because not even 2 minutes later, he burst into the bathroom as if he belonged. Amanda gasped, and her cheeks turned pink, even as her eyes twinkled with delight. This is the girls' bathroom. She tried to scold him, but ended up giggling instead. Oh, is it? He questioned casually. My mistake. Instead of leaving, however, he moved closer until he was circling Amanda, looking over her as if she were a piece of meat. It must have been fate, though. Why is that? Because you're here, he replied smoothly. I heard Amanda sigh and watched her lashes flutter, and I knew my work here was done. I headed for the door, but before I could make a quick escape, I heard a throat clear behind me. Looking over my shoulder, I lifted an eyebrow when I found Jamie watching me. He was now standing behind Amanda with his chest pressed against her back, smelling her hair and running his fingers up and down her arm. You owe me, he mouthed over her shoulder. I suppressed a laugh, gave him a curt nod, and rushed out the door. I didn't get far, though, because waiting just outside the bathroom was Ever. He was dressed casually in jeans and a button-up, and leaning against the wall across from the bathroom, but nothing about him seemed relaxed. His expression was completely blank, giving nothing away. He didn't speak, and neither did I. After a few seconds of staring, he jerked his head, telling me to follow him. Ever strolled unhurriedly down the hall with his hands in his pockets and his gaze dead ahead. I walked beside him, but was careful not to wander too close, not because I was afraid, but because the world didn't know yet that he was mine. He led me outside, and when I noticed he was heading for the parking lot, I frowned. He was parked all the way in the very last row when he usually parked in the front, but I already knew from his attire that he hadn't been in school all day. Ever, where have... I didn't get to say more because he turned to me, cupped my face with both hands, and kissed me senseless. Only when he was done stealing the very air I breathed did he free my lips.
I missed you, he said, but he sounded melancholy.
Where have you been? I finished while pretending I wasn't weak in the knees.
Dealing with my parents.
Your father told me he sent you to stay with your mom. He didn't tell me why, I added pointedly.
Ever snorted with a sardonic twist of his lips. He didn't want to make you uncomfortable by confronting you. He had no such reservations with me.
What's going on? I demanded.
My father found out about us. I don't know how, he said before I could ask. He didn't tell me. He just gave me a choice.
Which was?
He could tell your mom we've been screwing under his roof, his words, or I could move out.
I blanched. My mind rushed a million miles a minute until it came to one conclusion. The damage was done, and there was nothing we could do. I see you get your zest for blackmailing honestly, I quipped. After I clocked one of Ever's friends with a whiskey bottle, he had convinced our parents to send me to reform school in Europe. I came back a year later, ready to turn his world upside down by telling Thomas that his son was exiled, the vicious gang terrorizing the East Coast. But then he beat me to it when he threatened to tell his father about Rosalind's schizophrenia. Ever McNamara was many things, charming, hot, intelligent, and manipulative as hell. He had no problem treating the world as his personal doormat, and somehow I fell for the prick.
Among other things,
he winked, and I felt my lashes flutter, much like Amanda's had when Jamie began seducing her. Speak of the devil, I spotted Jamie heading straight for us, empty-handed. What's up, quick draw? He laughed and hopped on the top of Ever's truck before pulling out a cigarette. I frowned, trying to remember exactly when he started smoking so much. He used to only indulge in order to calm his emotions, but now I barely saw him without one.
She wouldn't shut up long enough for me to get my dick out. I fingered her, though. Did you know she's a squirter?
TMI, Buchanan, and it's not gentlemanly to kiss and tell, I scolded.
I didn't kiss her, he retorted. And my cousin is no gentleman, Ever added. Learned from the best, little cousin.
It was difficult to accept that Jamie was older than Ever since their maturity levels were on different planets. Jamie barely had 2 months on Ever, but could never seem to resist pulling that card.
I'm a changed man. Until B's around,
Jamie quipped. I tensed when I saw that Ever's frown was more vicious than I'd ever seen, and Jamie took notice.
My bad,
he apologized, though a deaf man could tell it was insincere. I could tell Ever wasn't anywhere close to letting it go, so I stood on my tiptoes and reminded him that Jamie had saved me from Amanda.
Get in the truck,
Ever ordered him, and then he looked at me.
You too.
With no consideration for the fact that it was the middle of a school day, I started for the passenger side. "There's your one," I warned Jamie as I passed him. He snorted and headed for the back door. "Where are we going?" I questioned my boyfriend once we were all inside.
"Shopping."
My heart galloped the moment we walked inside the boutique and I looked around. There were carefully organized mannequins and racks holding dresses of all colors, lengths, and volumes. And in the center of the store, in front of a wall of tall, shiny mirrors, was a raised marble white platform for modeling a dress. The heavy black curtain at the back of the stage was swiftly drawn back, and an elegant, middle-aged blonde carefully greeted us as she walked, no, glided into the room. She wore not only a blinding smile, but some killer cream high heels with a skin-tight red cocktail dress. She descended the short steps leading down from the platform and approached Ever. "Mr. McNamara, I assume?" Ever nodded and she shook his hand, then turned to Jamie. Always the flirt, he kissed her hand and winked. She responded with a disapproving pout, even as her eyes slowly but discreetly raked him over.
"I'm Jameson," he introduced,
and I was shocked to hear him offer his real name. He was always crabby whenever I used it. "Nice to meet you, young man." And then, finally, her attention was mine. "And you must be four." "Hi," I greeted with an awkward wave. I felt like a frumpy novice around her. Not only was she beautiful, but I had no doubt she was experienced, too. And a sweet Southern belle, no less. If she heard Jamie's derisive snicker, she didn't let on. Fortunately, she offered her hand for me to shake before I could flip him off. "I am Bichette Martin, and I'd be delighted to dress someone as lovely as you." Flatterer. "Thank you." Getting right to business, she pointed to the cream sofa situated in front of the platform and directed Ever and Jamie to wait there before leading me to a staging area in the back. She must have shown me 10 or 15 dresses before finally finding one that I would agree to try on. It seemed she had finally caught on that fluff, frills, and pink were out of the question. The first dress turned out to be a fail. One false move in the plunging number and I'd be Janet Jackson at the Super Bowl. The second wasn't as dangerous. It was light blue and long, flaring out at the hem. The back and the sides around my waist were cut to show slivers of skin, and the top was a halter, covering my chest but baring my shoulders. The only issue was that I could barely breathe, and I told her as much. "You have a spectacular derriere, Cherie. A dress that will curve and accentuate will look marvelous on you." "I'm not so sure I want to accentuate." Ever warned me this wouldn't be easy, but I've been doing this for 23 years, little girl. Moving along. It wasn't until the fourth dress that I thought I'd found the one. The emerald green almost resembled the shade of sneakers he wore the day we met. And it might have been a silly thing to remember if he hadn't later revealed that it was also his favorite color. The beaded halter was cropped to show a sliver of my stomach and had an open back, while the voluminous tulle and organza skirt fell a couple of inches above my knees. At least I don't have to worry about tripping. Still, I chewed on my lip as I stared at my reflection. I loved it. The only question was, would ever? "You were very smart to bring your handsome beau," Bichette said with knowing eyes. "Most girls spend agonizing hours deliberating in my shop, sometimes until they've dissolved into tears. But you, my dear, will know right away when you've found the perfect dress."
"How will I know that?"
"His eyes, mademoiselle. Trust his eyes."
I didn't understand her meaning until she inclined her head toward the front room, where Ever and Jamie had been waiting for at least an hour now. I chewed on my lip, wondering if I had the courage before deciding. Taking one last look in the mirror, I left the dressing room. Butterflies fluttered about inside my belly as I drew back the curtain and nervously stepped onto the platform. My eyes immediately went to the sofa where I expected to find him, but it was empty. The sound of a throat clearing, however, drew my gaze across the room where Jamie and Ever stood, looking like they'd been deep in conversation. Ever's back had been facing me, but when Jamie nodded at me over his shoulder, Ever turned. And the moment his eyes found me, his lips parted, and then he froze. I didn't know what to think, so I looked frantically to Jamie, who was biting his bottom lip and nodding with approval. Ever, however, still hadn't said a word. "Do you like it?" I asked timidly.
"I want to tear it off you,"
he responded hoarsely. I felt myself deflate and wanted to run for the shelter of the curtain. "I guess that's a no." He took a step forward as if learning how to walk for the first time, but then his steps became quick and sure the closer he got until he had moved up the platform steps and was standing in front of me. It was then I could see his eyes, glittering and gold and eyeing me hungrily. I could almost hear Bichette telling me to trust them.
"It's a goddamn yes, princess."
He then lifted my chin and kissed my lips.
"You've never looked more beautiful."
My sigh had him leaning in for another kiss when the sound of clapping drew us apart. "Well," Bichette demanded as she stepped into the waiting room. "Will it do or not?"
"Oh, it will do,"
Ever agreed. Bichette looked at me and winked.
"I'm impressed,"
Jamie remarked, with eyebrows damn near touching his hairline. He stalked across the room until he was standing in front of the platform.
"She almost looks like a girl."
I was about to respond when Ever drew me into his body and effectively stole my attention.
"Ms. Martin," Jamie called, "I'd like to purchase one of your dresses for my date."
My head popped up from Ever's chest. "Date? You have a date? Who is this girl? I must warn her."
"None of your business,"
he replied without so much as a glance my way. "I'm sorry, but I work by appointment only," Bichette said with a haughty tone, "and I'm afraid I've been booked for months." I frowned. "Then how were you able to see us today? I didn't have an appointment." She returned my frown.
"And I'm certain you did."
I looked up at Ever. "You made the appointment? When?"
3 months ago."
"But you hadn't asked me to go."
"I didn't know I needed to,"
he replied with a wry twist of his lips.
"This is all disgustingly sweet,"
Jamie cut in, sounding like he was close to gagging.
"But I'm trying to make a transaction here."
Turning to Bichette, he said,
"I don't need an appointment. I need that dress."
He then pointed to a beautiful red number with a sweetheart neckline descending into a gold and pearl beaded bodice, a short red skirt that would hug his date's thighs and show off her legs, particularly if they were long, and a dramatically full, overlaying red skirt with a hem that matched the bodice and would drag the floor as she walked.
"Excuse me," Bichette yelped. "Do you know how much that dress will cost?" "I didn't ask for the price,"
he bit back.
"Alterations will need to be made for a proper fit, and as I said, I'm booked. I already know her measurements."
Bichette paused, seemingly running out of arguments.
"You will have to be absolutely sure, young man, or my beautiful design will be wasted." "I'm sure."
"How?" I blurted. He finally regarded me with unchecked certainty.
"That's for me to know."
I didn't argue, and neither did Bichette when he drew her aside for his instructions. I looked up at Ever, hoping he might have some answers, and found him watching me,
Do you know who he's buying the dress for?
I have a good idea,
he answered slowly. I waited for him to tell me, but he shook his head.
Nothing I say or do will stop him, and I'm really not in the mood to destroy this place trying to get him to listen.
You two really need to learn how to communicate without using your fists. He gave a short laugh.
It's been our way since we learned how to use them.
Resting one hand over his heart and the other cupping his nape, I gave him a look that had his smile fading. Find a new way.
Hey, lady listeners. I think we probably left you on the edge of your on the edge of a cliff there. If so, I'm very sorry. If you love these narrators, Joe Arden and Savannah Peachwood, go search their names on Audible. Go get more from them. They're so good. I think Savannah Peachwood has done one of my books, if I'm not mistaken. I'm not sure. If not, then she will at some point. And Joe Arden as well. He's fantastic. The Peer and the Puppet, they also narrate that, the audiobook, so go grab that by B.B. Reed. The ebook is 99 cents and on Kindle Unlimited. Her new release, The Moth and the Flame, is getting much praise and much excitement across the interwebs. So go immerse yourself in all things B.B. Reed. Right now, I think you can get the paperback of The Peer and the Puppet, which is the book that's connected to this book, Evermore. And it's only $8 right now on Amazon. But B.B. Reed doesn't know how long that's going to last. That's just something that Amazon randomly did. So go snatch it up really quickly while you can. And head over to readmeroman.com and enter the giveaway under our current audiobook tab. Other than that, follow us on Instagram, you guys, at readmeromance, like us on Facebook. And if you have a second, it'd really help us out if you could rate, review, and subscribe to this podcast. It helps us out. And here we are at the end of season 2, getting ready to dive into season 3, and we want to keep it going. So we need your help. Go ahead and just take a second to do that for us. Rate, review, subscribe. That would be helpful. Okay, guys, love you. We'll be back tomorrow with the final installment of Evermore and some hilarious antics from the three of us. Bye.
Read me romance. Read me romance. Read me romance. Read me romance.